You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello, everyone. Once again, a warm welcome to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Dave Kellner, Mike Grenham and Dave Tindall, as usual, with you, ready to analyse the Commercial Bank Qatar Masters and the Farmers Insurance Open. Big week in the world of golf coming up. First of all, a warm welcome to Dave Tindall.
Hello.
How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. Are you?
Yeah, I'm very well. Very well indeed. Well, Mr. Grenham?
I am very well.
good.
Done on Adam Hadwin, quickly.
Yeah, he was good, wasn't he? Well, that third round was sensational, 59, to get into contention, Mike, but eventually missed out just by one, which was a little bit disappointing. But I suppose when I woke up on Saturday morning, I was thinking, well, he's got no chance of even placing here.
Yeah, so you had a great Saturday, hadn't you? Was he your only pick in that event, Dave?
Yeah, he was, yeah.
So yeah, I often think in golf it's a funny thing that if you'd picked a 66-1 horse that got placed, everyone would be saying how brilliantly you did, and it was your only bet. And winners, it's all about winners for some reason, isn't it, in golf?
That's the way it is, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, for one bet, you've got a nice profit there, but unless you actually bag the winner, no, people don't praise you as much on Twitter and things like that, I think.
It is like that, isn't it, Dave, to a certain extent?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, there's
it's different when you have six bets or something, isn't it? Because you're probably only getting your money back with the players, but when you've only had one,
it's pretty much pinpointing it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he did well in the end to separate himself, because at one point there was about seven tied for the lead and you thought he might get nothing here at all.
Yeah.
But he stayed on, didn't he, quite well at the finish.
The winner, Hudson Swafford, had been threatening to do that for a while. If you look at those guys that have made consecutive cuts on the PGA Tour, he's right up there in the top five. And I thought it was going to happen, but then he keeps getting into contention and missing out. And then, Dave, you think, is he a shirker?
Yeah, well, you could have thought the same about Tommy Fleetwood as well, couldn't you? So both sort of two players with little squiggles next to them maybe came through last week. So, you know, people are a bit quick to sort of write people off, aren't they? Say, well, he's never going to win. So we'll see. Rafa Cabrera will probably win this week now, just to underline the point. But
moving on to Fleetwood, a good win for him as well. He played ever so well, didn't he, on Sunday? So Tyrrell Hatton, you had, Dave, who was leading overnight. He dropped off. I did a little bit on him myself.
You had Benny Ahn as well.
Yeah, with his seven on a par three on the final day.
I was feeling for you there, because he was just moving into contention, creeping into contention, Benny Ahn, and they cut to him, and I've not seen any shots from him in a while. And then you either know it's going to be stone dead or an absolute disaster. And it was the latter, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, he must have been about 1,500 at that stage, so he was right in contention, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So, hey-ho.
Let's get stuck into this week then, chaps. Two good events this week. We'll start with the Commercial Bank Qatar Masters, and this is the second leg of the Middle East Swing. Definitely the least high-profile of the three events, and you can see that in the entry list as well. It lacks the star names of Abu Dhabi and Dubai, but that doesn't make it any less intriguing. And Alex Noren just shared favouritism here with William Hill from Bernd Wiesberger and Martin Kaymer. Noren's in the market at 11-1, Wiesberger 12-1, with Kaymer 12-1. The aforementioned Rafa Cabrera-Bello is 16-1. Tommy Fleetwood, last week's winner, 18-1. Torbjörn Olesen is 25s. Joost Luiten, 28-1. Young-Yun Wang is 33-1, along with Pablo Larrazabal, and it's 35s and bigger the rest. Well, it's definitely worth looking at form from the two events that I mentioned in previous years, with it being the middle leg of the Middle East Swing. This course is a little different. The greens are slightly more grainy, and not quite as long, this golf course, either, Dave.
That's right, yeah, and it's you probably get more wind here, don't you, than the other two as well, so it has attracted. You look down the list of winners and you'll see quite a few Open champions in there. Paul Laurie's won it twice, Ernie Els. South Africans do well. Brandon Grace, the winner for the last 2 years, although he's not playing this year. I wonder why that is.
He has commented on it, and I can't remember what he said, but there is a reason.
Okay. But he actually said in one of his press conferences that South Africans like the wind and they like the grainier greens, so they're suited to this event. And if you look at the winners, he's won it twice. Ernie Els has won it. Retief Hoosen has won it. So it does certainly play into their hands. And you could certainly put up a case for a couple of the South Africans this week, even though the absolute stellar ones aren't playing.
And Mike, you look at this event, and as Dave's just mentioned, the roll call of winners throughout the years have been linked specialists. You look at the last 6 years, it's a strange dynamic from Paul Laurie, who won it in 2012, through to Brandon Grace, who's won it the last 2 years.
Yeah, absolutely, Dave. Yeah, Link's form looks decent here, doesn't it?
Are you focusing on anything else then, Mike?
Link's
in terms of the stats?
Greens and regulation are a real factor here, aren't they? Not so much last year for Brandon Grace, but usually the guys who were at the top of the leaderboard have hit the greens in the right number. That's self-evident a lot of weeks, but it does seem to be a factor here. I'd say off the tee, you're looking more for distance than accuracy. Mm-hmm. You can give it a little bit of a belt here. The rust not too penal. Driving accuracy is not a factor I'd be that interested in. But I do like them to be able to give it a bit of a wallop, at least a little bit, you know.
Mm. Picks then, chaps. Dave?
I've got one.
I've got one as well.
I've got one too.
Okay. 1-1-1-1. Yeah. 1-1-1-1-1.
Yeah.
Here. Mike?
I'll go first. I'm going for a little bit of a... Just because no one else is putting their hand up. I've gone for a little bit of a speculative one here because he's not in the best of form. But Andy Sullivan's my pick at 40-1. Had an absolutely awful final round in Abu Dhabi last week and where he shot 79 to plummet down the leaderboard. But I'm hoping that might spur him on this week, actually. That is a little kind of... reverse psychology, you know, where he kind of galvanises him a little bit. Because it's not that long since he was finishing third at the Nedbank, then finished 40th at the end of season event in Dubai, and missed the cut in South Africa before Abu Dhabi. So, was in very good form up until the last couple of outings. So, I'm just hoping that he can bounce back and that he will show the kind of... He's got some good form in the Middle East, to be fair. A number of decent seconds in Dubai and this part of the world. And he's a very good links player. He was very good finishes in the Scottish Open and the Open last year. And a whole host of decent finishes in these types of events on links or links-type courses. So 40-1 for a player of his ability... It looks quite big in this field for me. There is the chance that there is something wrong and this week he'll shoot another 79 somewhere down the line. But I don't think so. I'm hoping that, like I say, that will have got him going and he'll have his head down to play well at a course where he's got two top 20s in his last three outings, a 9th and a 19th. Albeit sandwiched in the middle there was a miscut. So it's not impossible that could happen again. But a 40-1, I'm more than willing to give him a try.
And Dave talked about South Africans having good records at this venue. Obviously, Sullivan's not a South African, no. But some of his best forms come in South Africa.
Yeah, yes.
It's got to be a positive.
Absolutely, yes. Well said, Dave.
Mr. Tindall?
Yeah, I'm going to go for Thorbjørn Olesen at 25-1.
Okay.
He's a course horse, isn't he? He's one of these guys who always plays well in the Middle East, and probably this is his best one. He was runner-up last year, and then just 2 years before that, he was third. So some really, really good form. He's come close to the title. And he did enough last week to make me think he's okay, he's playing well. Tied 29th in Abu Dhabi, that was okay. A couple of years ago, I was backing him in these Middle East events, and then it was revealed that he had a wrist injury. Right. Well, thanks for that. But I think tied 29th seems decent enough. I just think if you look at some of those around the top 10 in the betting,
yes,
a lot of them are kind of not very good at winning. Noren obviously is, and that's probably why he's favourite. But Wiesberger doesn't win as often as he should. Keim has forgotten how to win. Rafa Cabrera never wins. So just at the price, I know I was saying earlier, you can't write these guys off, but Olesen has won in 2014, 2015, 2016. So he's a proven winner.
Yeah.
And I think that also applies to Andy Sullivan. So I think that is a good price on him because some of the others, Aiken doesn't really win.
I'm going
often.
For him, so don't say
right,
too
okay.
many.
Well,
bad
I'm very close
him.
To him. I think he's a good each way price, but I want someone who I think can get over the line and actually win this week. Mike's saying, you know, you've judged on your winners, and I think I'd rather be on someone who I know can get it done. So Olesen in this part of the world. In his press conference, he said he always likes playing in the wind, which we should get here. I think Sunday's the windiest day on the forecast.
Yeah.
Says the course suits his eye, all that kind of thing. And I just think he's you know, he's due for another big run.
He's a good player, isn't he? Yeah.
On this
he's high on my list, I have to say.
He was high on my list as well. But the way I think about Olesen is, you, well, when we've reviewed weeks when Olesen's won, it's always been, oh, he's won at 100 to 1. He's won at 80 to 1 when you least expect it and you think, how is he going off at such a big price? This week he's not such a big price, and that just puts me off slightly.
Yeah, I know he's like famously inconsistent, but I think if there is a part of the world where he, you know, time and time again he does well, it is the Middle East. I think he's one of the Nordic players who lives there in the winter as a home,
right,
there,
yeah.
So he's very much at home.
I am going with Thomas Erkin at 35 to 1 as my one selection here. We mentioned the link with the South Africans. I won't go through all that again, but he's got good form here. Finished sixth here in 2011 and fifth in 2014. And he's really striking the ball brilliantly at the moment. Mike, you mentioned the greens in red being a key statistic this week.
Yep.
In four of his last nine starts on tour, he's topped the greens in regulation statistic.
Yeah, I think he might be top for the tour this season.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. And that's always been a stat worthy of consideration around Doha Golf Club. And he's fourth at the Alfred Dunhill Championship, was followed by a fifth in the South African Open and a 13th last week in Abu Dhabi. So he's got that perfect blend of current form and course form. It's not an incredible price, admittedly, on Thomas Erkin, because Dave, you rightly mentioned that he doesn't win that often. But each way, getting a quarter of the odds first five, definitely be looking at Erkin to have a high finish, post a high finish this week. Now, I think 35s is fair.
Yeah. Definitely.
Fair dues.
Other mentions then, Mike?
Norrin must go well, mustn't he?
Yep.
What do you think? How do you reckon?
It's funny you mention that, because I was looking back at the notes from last year. Mm. Tipped him up last year.
Do you keep notes?
Tipped him up last year in this podcast. You know I do, Mike.
At least you'll make notes.
You know I do.
It's all up here.
50 to 1. Put him up in this event last year.
You did?
Yeah.
Really?
50 to 1. Wow. Is it 11 to 1? So it shows you how things can change in a year's worth of play.
He has definitely won about 14 times since.
I think it's worth saying that I think he was tied 13th last week, but relatively that was one of his best ever performances in Abu Dhabi. So yeah. I think it's a good sign that he's trained on after his brilliant.
I think he's the correct favourite, isn't he? Don't you think, Mike?
Yeah. He's you could argue he's a reasonable price at 11 to 1. I certainly fancy him more than Wiesberger and Keimer at 12s. Much as I like those two, I think Dave said they don't really win often enough, do they, to be backing them at 12 to 1.
Yeah, they're good for sort of fantasy teams, but
yeah, they're
those
good each
prices.
Way, each way bets maybe at bigger prices, but I'd like to see Keimer needs to win. He's not the kind of cold, steely assassin of old, is he?
I like that description. Yeah, because he used to be, when you were thinking about having a player in contention and one that you thought were close, you'd want him every single time. Mm.
And if you'd backed against him and he was there in play, whereas now you think, he'll be duffing a chip in a minute, he'll be all right.
It has been his chipping, hasn't it? That's the problem.
Problem.
Saw it last week when he was in contention and gets one of those tight lies around the greens.
He's got a real problem there. You know, I backed him in the Open last year and his chipping was horrendous. And it's not... He's so hard-working, he'll sort it, but you're just 12-1 at the moment. No, you'd need to see him getting over the line, wouldn't you, I think?
He was 28th last week on a course that he's got miles better form on.
Yeah.
What do you think to Tommy Fleetwood then?
I think he could go well. He's a player I like and finished well. And, he's seventh here last year, wasn't he?
Yeah, this looks like a perfect layout for him.
So you've got to say he's in very good form.
I did have a quick look what he did the week after the time he won the Johnny Walk in 2013. He missed a cut by a mile, but I think he was a younger guy there, maybe celebrated a bit too much.
I'm going to talk about one of my picks very fact, missing the cut after winning. No, not playing rubbish after winning in my next event.
Because
I think it does affect them when they're younger, don't you? It must be very hard to celebrate and then get focused again when you've done something.
Although I'll be talking about that as well.
Oh, will you?
Yes.
Right. It's a bit different when you're Bernard Langer and you win every week, you know, but... on the Champions Tour.
Yeah, he's won again.
I don't think he goes out on the last beat.
No, I don't think so.
Might have a Bible reading. <Yeah.
laughs> Glass of wine that he'd measure how much he had. From the top of the glass.
Should we get stuck into the other event?
We might as well.
This is a cracker.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, just before you go on that, Dave, I did Jos Lauten, our old favourite. He was on my mind for this 13th, I think he was here last year. He plays links well and... I might back him in running if he gives a good run. And on a couple of outsiders that I should mention as well, Gregory Bourdi could play well in this. He's quite a big price, about hundreds, I think. Might be.
Yes, he is 100 to 1.
Yeah, I just thought he'd have a chance. And Mick Whelan, if he came back to form. But they're not neither of those two are playing quite well enough. But he's interests me, though, that's all I'll say.
On the South Africans as well, you've picked Aiken, yeah. Dean Burmester and George Curtsey.
Yeah.
Worth looking at as well.
You say George Curtsey every week, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, just no matter whether he's playing or not.
He's a big Liverpool fan.
Is he?
Is that why? Is that the...
Probably.
The bias there.
Subliminally, I'm thinking.
Yeah. Bromance with him.
Lovely fella.
Let's get stuck into the Farmers Insurance Open then. This week's PGA Tour event, good event. Dustin Johnson and Jason Day at the top of the betting, both 9-1 here with William Hill. Hideki Matsuyama, 12-1. Brant Snedeker is 25s. Brooks Koepka, Jimmy Walker, Justin Rose and Patrick Reed and Ricky Fowler all 28-1, and Tiger Woods is back 33-1. He's back in competitive action and it's 40-1 and bigger the rest. He's returning to the scene of his greatest ever triumph, Tiger. That 2008 US Open win will always be remembered as his crowning glory, I think. Saw of Rocco mediating the 18-hole playoff. I don't remember much about that playoff at all, but I remember they put their hit on that 72nd hole to get into the playoff.
Yeah.
Made that one down the hill from about 12 feet. And this event is one that Woods has owned around this golf course anyway, Mike. In addition to that win in 2008, he's won this championship 7 times, most recently in 2013, which is an incredible record. He's 33-1 on his return
double
to competitive action. Made plenty of birdies in the Hero World Challenge, which was just a knock-around in the Bahamas at the end of last year. Unfortunately, he chucked a few doubles in there as well. Let's start with Tiger. Yeah, 33-1. Yeah. What do you expect from him
this
week?
Well, you'd say, wouldn't you, had he not got this phenomenal record at this course, that this venue... This would be a bad place to start because it's a tough course. It's not like the Bahamas, is it? No one will be winning this with 25 under or anything like it. It's demanding, isn't it? So I just wonder whether it's the right place for him to start. I know that sounds crazy given his superb record, but yeah, it's a challenge here, I think, isn't it?
You can get exposed quickly on this golf course. Yeah. It's split between Torrey North and Torrey South, and all the players get one crack at Torrey North, which is traditionally the easier of the two.
It's a bit easier, yeah.
Yeah, it is a bit easier. It has been modified in the last 9 months, hasn't it, by Tom Weisskopf. He's made some changes, extended the length of the golf course, removed some of the trees, and changed the nines as well, reversed the nines. So what was the ninth hole will now play as the 18th.
Has he?
Yeah, he has.
On which course?
On Torrey North.
Oh, has he?
Yeah, right. Torrey South remains... just a monster. It was the toughest par 72 on tour last year. Found it interesting what Mike said about this might not be the ideal venue for Tiger Woods to start, even though he's an 8-time champion.
Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean, because it's tough, and if you've got any weaknesses in your game, Dave, they'll be exposed. This is a proper golf course.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost bizarre why he would win on this one so much anyway, given that, you know, the fairways are tight and it's so... difficult. Maybe there are other ones you would have thought. I mean, I know he's a Californian kid and he grew up there. And
I think it's because everyone misses fairways around this venue. Yeah, and if you're further down there...
Yeah, but then maybe early in his career he was hitting it further than anyone else, but everyone else caught up. He won 2013, was that his last win?
Yes.
Yeah.
On this golf course.
Yeah, so there must be an element of he stands on the first tee thinking, I'm just going to win here. But obviously coming back this time, what will he be thinking? I find it hard to work out, because he played better than I thought he would in the Bahamas, but ultimately he came 15th of the 17 who finished.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the bottom line, isn't it? The score you hand in.
I take it no one's tipping him this week.
He played better, though.
He did play better. Yeah. He made the most birdies
signs,
in the week.
Wasn't there?
Yeah.
But everyone could say that, who played in that field. I played better than my finish. I don't know. I mean, what do you think? If I offered you a finishing position, what are you taking?
I think he might miss the cut this week.
We're not betting on that, are we? Whether he makes the cut?
I don't know if we are or not. Let me have a quick check.
I mean, given that he's 33-1 in the outright, so it should be a good price to miss the cut if that was the case.
I don't think we have got that market up at the moment, unfortunately. No, not there at the moment.
If you're having a side bet with me, what would you...
Well, I think he'll miss the cut, because I think, like Mike said, it's so demanding, and he's not had any competitive action, even though he did play that one event in the in the Hero World Challenge. I think he'll miss the cut this week, Tiger Woods, and I think if you were looking to back him in the outright market, you'd want triple figures, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, it's just these course records are so phenomenal. Who's going to lay you triple figures pre-tournament, you know?
What do you think? Do you think he misses?
It wouldn't be a surprise, would it? He's more, stating the obvious here, he's more likely to miss the cut than win that. The prices reflect that, don't they? But because he'd probably be slightly, what would he be? Slightly odds on to miss the cut, do you think?
No, I think it'd be odds against to miss the cut. Yeah, I think he'd be around about 11 to 8 to miss the cut and 8 to 15 roughly to make the cut.
To make the cut, yeah, he probably would be actually. Probably would be odds against to. I think he scrambles home and makes the cut.
Right.
Doesn't absolutely challenge. I think.
Given that one of them's an easier course, one of the rounds.
That's the key, isn't it? He's got to play the North well, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Obviously.
He could maybe get around there in 69, then so hold on. Yeah.
It's just been fascinating to have him back. He's been playing a lot, hasn't he? I mean, really, we're speculating and we don't really know is the truth because what's his practice been like? He showed some decent form in Bahamas, loves the course, and he is Tiger Woods. I'd love to see him make the cut and be in the top 10.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah. You know,
if he put together four solid rounds
yeah,
and made the cut and got inside the top 10, that would be terrific. As far as picks are concerned, I've got a couple.
I'm going for Tiger, let's put it
no,
that way.
No.
Yeah. I've got two.
Dave Tindall?
Two.
Oh, two.
It's just the six picks then.
Just the six picks. Dave, you lead off then this time.
I'm going to lead off. I think this is a tournament. Tiger obviously proves it more than anyone. I think this is a tournament where course form is a strong thing to look at. So I'm going to go with Martin Laird.
Yeah, I like him a lot.
Anybody for him?
I've not picked him.
No, but he's my player, I don't want to win.
Yeah, I think he'd be down there for me as well.
Yeah, top 10 the last 2 years, so he's shown he can really play well at this venue. When he's interviewed, because he's got such a high ball flight, he says he can get to pins that others can't. Hits it a mile, which I think is really good on this course. He was tied, he was 33rd in driving distance last year. He even admits it's probably his favourite course on tour, the South Course. So all positive vibes for Martin Laird. And then he comes to the course in really good form as well. He was tied 9th in last week's career Builder Challenge. And as well as that, looking at his stats in that one, you expect he'll be well up the driving distance stats. He was really high up the driving accuracy stats. So he's hitting it long and straight. And I think to do that, that's sort of a perfect thing to be doing going into the South Course at Torrey Pines. So I think he's a really nice bet this week at 50-1. Also, do you remember I've talked before about the Future of Fantasy website, which lists the greens?
Yes.
Pawana, which I can now say.
Yeah.
He's in the top. They list about 20 players. He's in there for one of the best putters on Pawana.
Right.
So I think all the elements put together, I think he could make a big challenge this week. You know, the proof is in past results, tied 7th and tied 8th at this course. And last year's was weird, wasn't it? That last final round last year.
That was crazy, wasn't it?
Did anyone put up Jimmy Walker last year?
I think you were on him, weren't you, Mike? I'm sure you were on Jimmy Walker last year.
I was, yes.
Because if that had just been a normal Sunday, then he probably would have won that tournament. It just became freakish, didn't it? And Snedeker shot that 69, which was
got in on the
nearly
Sunday,
nine shots better than the average.
That was the best round on tour last year, wasn't it?
So if that had just been a normal thing, he would have fancied Walker to maybe get over the line, but it was a bit freaky. But Laird shot 77 that day and actually went forward a place.
Yeah.
So it was a really strange one. But I don't think the weather's too bad this time. So I think a guy who's won on the West Coast before, Martin Laird, I think he's got a lot going for him. 50-1 is my main pick.
I like him a lot. Mike, your selection?
Yeah, Jimmy Walker, should have. Looked like he was going to win last year, I thought. Just a bit annoying, that, wasn't it, on the Sunday? Well played by Brant Snedeker. I've gone for two this year, one at a time, obviously, but they're both pretty big hitters. First one up is Brooks Koepka, who's finished last season in nice form, or is it this season, or whenever it was. He was second in the Shriners, won in Japan in whatever season they're playing in, and then was 13th in the World Challenge in the Bahamas. My key stat this week is strokes tee to green. I think when you look back at the last two or three years here, that's a very key stat in this event. I think you know it's one that it's a very important stat. I think the best of times, but it's one that I do like a lot for this week. Koepka was 37th on tour for that last year, 6th at the moment for this year, and Also, he bangs it a mile, which you have to do here. It helps anyway, let's put it that way, to be quite high in the driving distance ratings. It doesn't. That's not to say that people can't win who don't hit along, with Brent Snedeker being a good example of that. But I like them if they can give it a good hit here. So that and the STTG rank, as I call it, puts me towards Brooks. He was 41st here in 2015, but interestingly enough, he'd won at Phoenix the previous week. So he was out on the beer for three nights and didn't get enough sleep. I'm making that up, but that's what I'm blaming his 41st on. He did start with a 66.
Yeah. I think that's a perfectly reasonable explanation, Mike.
Yeah.
And it is one of those things where you sometimes ride the euphoria of the week before in that opening round and then dip.
That's exactly what I was thinking. So I just thought, Brooks Koepka is not going to be 28-1 that often this year in a field like this. There is some quality at the top, obviously, but yeah. I like his chances. Big hitter, good tee to green.
I like him a lot, Brooks Koepka. I'm going with Gary Woodland.
Similar kind of.
At 40-1. Yeah, similar kind of game to Brooks Koepka. Obviously not as good as Koepka. I got a tweet from someone last year saying, you lot always tip Gary Woodland, so I'm not going to disappoint him if he's listening this time around. But he's starting to harness his power positively, I think, and he comes into this on the back of a second-place finish in the OHL Classic, followed by a sixth in the Sony Open in Hawaii. Had a chance to win this event last year, but closed with that 82 in that horrible weather that seemed to affect everyone apart from Snedeker. And he's talked about his love for this golf course and how it really suits his game, and especially his strong fade off the tee, which is very similar to Koepka, the way he flights his ball off the tee. No more excuses now for Woodland. He's not won in 3 years. Should be more prolific with the game he has.
He should.
And it can start this week on this golf course, hopefully. So 40-1, Gary Woodland is my main selection here. Point each way.
Back to me. Right, I'm going to throw the cat amongst the pigeons.
Okay.
Look out, pigeons. There's a cat coming. And it's Hudson Swafford.
Really? 66-1.
So, I mean, Mike said it can be difficult when you've got your first win. I just look at him and look at his temperament. He just seems like a big sort of, you know, big genial kind of guy.
You know who he reminds me of? He looks like, do you know the American football player, Ben Roethlisberger?
Yes.
Have you seen him? They look exactly the same. You couldn't tell them apart. They don't look. He doesn't really look like a sportsman, does he?
No.
Swafford.
That's right, yeah. There's just something very kind of genial about it. You imagine him just sort of wandering around, getting unfazed by everything. And there is a precedent, actually, for someone who won that Career Builder Challenge as their first win. Do you remember when Johnny Vegas won it? Mike, you'll remember
that?
Yeah,
I remember that. Yeah,
so Johnny Vegas, similar sort of personality, very laid back. He goes and wins it was called the Bob Hope back then, wins that following week, comes to Torrey Pines and finishes third.
Right.
So that's my little, it can be done for Hudson Swafford.
He's a long hitter as well.
Yeah, that's it, man. The other thing is he's so suited to this course, Hudson Swafford. Hits it an absolute mile. He's been in the top five for driving distance in each of his last four starts. So I agree with Mike. I think I won a big hitter this week, so I'm with Laird and Swafford. Tied 13th last year as well, he's got on his resume, Swafford.
Right.
So he has done it on this course before. And I just think it's a bit more of a trend these days that players can win and then do it again. I'd rather
it's a big price, isn't
follow
it,
the hot hand and maybe try and anticipate someone.
When you were talking about it, I expected him to be shorter, but it is a decent field, of course, but 66 could look big, couldn't it?
Yeah, you look at the all-round ranking last year. I was looking at the all-round ranking last year, the top 12 players. It's all full of everyone you'd imagine, DJ, Jason Day, Ricky Fowler, everybody you'd think, and then he's in there in 10th, so he's got a lot of game, this guy, and I think he could really win big time. I think the problem for him was just getting over that line for the first time. He'd been in the top three for the last three tournaments at halfway, so it was coming, wasn't it? I mean, I've watched a lot of golf down the years, and I can remember someone like David Duval was written off as a can't win. Then he won, and then he won his next two starts as well. Again,
you're not having him as good as Duval, are you? Is he going to win an Open? No.
Who knows how he's going to... But at that stage, Duval, who went on to be a world number one, was just kind of a promising player who didn't get too emotional on the course. I think Swafford just the way he won it last year, he wasn't really under the gun, I don't think. I think he went out and won that. I think it's not like he fell over the line and it was all a bit stressful. I just think he played good shots down the stretch.
I said that,
and
to,
we'll take a lot from it.
I said that to Mike yesterday, that even though I was disappointed that Hadwin didn't close out the championship, Swafford did nothing wrong in those last four holes and actually went out and won the tournament.
Yeah.
Made a couple of really good birdies on 16 and 17 down the stretch, and he impressed me, Swafford, and 66 to 1.
Yeah, it's
good
not
price.
Like I'm having to back him at 28 or something. Yeah. 66, definite some each way juice in that.
Mike, your second selection?
JB Holmes is my second selection. He can definitely belt it off the old tee. Second and sixth here in the last couple of years. So after being pretty rubbish here for quite a long time, he's certainly got the hang of Torrey Pines. It's JB, and I think it's just worth reiterating that what a good season he had last year. He was third in the Open and fourth in the US Masters was JB Holmes last year. Ended last season with an 11th in the World Challenge, which is a limited field, to be fair, so it's probably not quite as good as it sounds, but was fourth in the BMW in the playoffs. So ended the season nicely, hits it a mile, 38th on strokes, tee to green last season. So for someone who hits it a long way and top 40 on that, key stat for me this week, one that I'm really looking at. I just think JB Holmes, given those course figures, that 50-1 jumps out at me a little bit. I didn't expect that. So maybe it's just because he hasn't been playing since that Bahamian event. I'm hoping he's ready. He's been doing a little bit of fishing and what have you. I've been watching on Twitter. Maybe he's hit a couple of golf balls. I'm hoping he's ready to go. Once he gets the hang of a course, JB, I think he's a kind of guy, horses for courses, man. So now he seems to like Torrey Pines. I'm willing to give him a chance at 50s. Big price.
Yeah, hasn't he won in Phoenix twice? So
he does enjoy
it.
Love Phoenix.
My second selection is Mark Leishman.
Good, because he was my next one.
Oh, was he?
He would have been, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's a good price. He was 50-1 in this last year, and he's definitely in better form in the run-up to this championship this time around than he was last season. In a similar way to Woodland, Torrey Pines is right up his street, long off the tee, and generally has a problem finding fairways, but that affects everyone on this golf course. And I think you mentioned it earlier when you were talking about your first selection, Dave, that the way Martin Laird hits those towering iron shots, that's what Leishman does. He hits towering iron shots, and that really helps him around this venue. And he's twice been runner-up here in 2010 and 2014, finished ninth in 2011 as well. Comes into this on the back of four straight top 25s worldwide, so in decent form, and shot all four rounds in the 60s at the Sony Open. I think he's a very decent price at 80-1, so had to be with him.
Yeah, I was surprised he was 80s. I thought he was nailed on to be 50s or 66s.
Yeah, I did as well. I did, so I'm happy to see 80-1 on Mr. Leishman.
Mm.
We need a couple of places, don't we? Six selections this week.
Six selections, yeah.
In this event.
Yeah, but at least two of them aren't Dustin and Jason Day.
They're all decent odds, aren't they?
Well, 40-1 is the lowest, isn't it?
Well, apart from Koepka, 28-1.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
But then, yeah, they're all 40-1.
It's a good field, though,
bigger,
isn't it? It's a good field. Jason Day's had phenomenal form here until last year. I think he could go well this week. I'd rather him than Dustin Johnson myself at the top of the market.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think I'd be with Dustin Johnson, actually. Just because I think Dustin Johnson's in better... This course should be...
Yeah.
Dustin Johnson should love it, shouldn't he? I don't know. I can't
he
believe he
seem to, though.
No, I know.
He's got a third, doesn't he? He's got a third in 2011, I think. But yeah, I would have thought he would just have a list of top tens here, but he hasn't.
No.
But I mean,
for some of his ability, you know, when you compare that to Day's record here, he's
he's got something to find, hasn't he, with Jason Day? I wasn't
one
tempted
top
by
ten in about eight outings, eight or nine outings for Johnson.
I wasn't tempted by either of them, though, really.
Weren't you?
No,
I thought Jason Day might just bounce back here. I thought this is a course, it's a course he loves, or two courses that he loves. Yeah, ninth, second and first, three of the last 4 years.
I think with DJ, his price here is similar to what it is to win majors. So is this therefore not decent value?
You know he's fully tuned for major championships though, don't you? And he could go walkabout mentally.
I think last week, I think he was kind of... You know, he finished second, was way not totally on his game. So if he can do that, and you know, putt not so great, it does show you what he might do if it clicks.
Mm. Who else did you like at bigger prices then, away from the market leaders?
Martin Laird was high on my list. I also be interested to see how Benny Ahn plays this year. He's never This week, rather, yeah, after picking him last week. He never played here before, but this car could suit him. It wouldn't surprise me to see him running quite well. I tell you, a guy you mentioned last week, made a little bit of a joke about, Cameron Smith.
Yeah.
I didn't really have this tournament in mind for him, I must say, but it's going to be the tougher tracks do suit him, and 150-1, you could have a worse outsider than that. Mm. So I wouldn't be surprised if he outperforms his odds. And Jimmy Walker was close for me as well after last year. Yeah. I think he liked it here.
I had three names written down, and fortunately you've picked one in Brooks Koepka, who was very close for me, and Dave's picked the other one in Martin Laird, so he was on my mind. One other I need to mention, Grayson Murray, who's 100-1 in the betting here.
What's this fashion for having two surnames? Hodson Swaffer and Grayson Murray.
I think he's got a chance this
Bradley.
Week. Yeah, there you go. That's another one.
I could go on all night.
Patton Kazir.
He's extremely long off the tee, is Grayson Murray. Played very well on his starts on the PGA Tour so far this season. 8th at the Sanderson Farms, 12th at the Career Builder last week. Has played some tournament golf as a junior at Torrey Pines as well. I think he's really interesting at 100-1, Grayson Murray, on his debut in the event. So he's one I'm keeping an eye on.
I mentioned Johnny Vegas earlier, who was third here on debut. He's had a couple of top 20s in the last 2 years, and he's been in quite good form of late, probably for about 6 months. He's 1-2-5.
Yeah.
He won the World Juniors here, which I think they must hold the World Juniors here about every month, because virtually everyone in the field seems to have won the World Juniors.
There are lots
here.
Of them.
Like, really? Are there sort of categories for it or something?
But I think it is. Does it? I'm not sure exactly how it works, but I think it goes on age groups, doesn't it?
Right.
So
I think Ernie Els.
They'll hold a World Juniors for each specific age group. So if you've got obviously differences in ages in the field, they've all maybe won it 1 year.
Yeah, but there's a few, isn't there, in the field?
Not been competing against each other. Yeah, there's a few of them. Okay, chaps, who's the player you don't want to win this week?
Martin Laird was very close for me. I mean, Dave's picked him, so that's obviously consolation.
Yeah, I'd say Grayson Murray in the PGA Tour event, definitely Grayson Murray. And
if I'm picking 100-1 as my player I don't want to win, I'm having a saver on him at that price.
I've got a couple of picks in there though already, and we've got six, so maybe I'll have a few quid on him. We'll see.
Yeah.
And I think Tommy Fleetwood would be the man in the Qatar Masters.
Given that I've gone for Swafford on the basis that you can still play well a week after, if Tommy Fleetwood won, that would be like, the wrong one. So yeah, he's my one.
Yeah, Loughton for me in the Qatar.
Let's recap the selections then. Dave, your selections for this week?
Yeah, so in Qatar, I will have 1.5 each way on Thorbjørn Olesen. And in Torrey Pines, I'll have 1 each way, Martin Laird at 50s, and 1 each way, Hodson Swafford at 66s.
Okay, Mike?
I'm going to have 1 win and 0.5 place on all three of mine. That'll be my stake consistent throughout. Andy Sullivan at 40s, the Qatar event, and in the US, Brooks Koepka at 28s, and JB Holmes at 50.
I'll go 1 each way on all three of my selections. In the Qatar Masters, Thomas Akin at 35-1. And in the Farmers Insurance, Gary Woodland at 40-1 and Mark Leishman at 80-1. Enjoyed that, chaps. Thank you, Mike.
Cheers, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Tindall.
Yeah, cheers.
Thank you, everyone that's tuned in and listened. Remember, you can follow us all on Twitter as well. It's at M. Grenham, at Dave Tindall Golf, and at D. Kellner. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Get your bets on for the Qatar Masters and the Farmers Insurance Open here with William Hill. Check out all the betting on the William Hill website. And myself, Mike, and Dave will be back next week. If you're having a bet, good luck.
Get a £5 free bet every week with Offer Club from William Hill.
Hey-o, let's go, let's go.
Simply stake a total of £20 or more across the week on pre-match football accumulators with four or more selections, and you'll get a £5 free bet on the Friday. Plus, you can get on faster and easier than ever with our new and improved mobile betting experience. Join William Hill Offer Club on mobile or online now. When the fun stops.